welcome to Tune 2 Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier, bringing you programs from radio's golden era. Coming up in this hour, mystery. Radio actor Frank Lovejoy stars in Nightbeat, coming up in a while, but right now, it's one of the longest-running mystery shows on radio. Bennett Kilpak stars as Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, from February 10th, 1944. This episode called The Boy Who Used Big Words.
Tracer of Lost Persons is on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, the makers of Colonel's toothpaste present Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, one of the most famous characters of American fiction in one of radio's most thrilling dramas. Tonight and every Thursday night from 7:30 to 8 Eastern Wartime, the famous old investigator will take from his files and bring to us one of his most celebrated missing persons cases. But first, for bright, sparkling teeth, a $1 million smile, try the new Colonos toothpaste. It's a high-polishing toothpaste that acts like a jeweler's polish, removing tarnish from silver. Now for Mr. Keene and the case of the boy who used big words. Our story opens in the reception room of Mr. Keene's office as Miss Ellis talks with an unusual visitor, Jimmy Harmon, who is only 12 but wears horn-rimmed glasses and a very serious manner.
Young man, you say you want to see Mr. Keene at once.
Yes, ma'am, I've got to.
Well, he's a very busy man.
I know, but the nature of my business is very imperative.
Important, you mean?
Imperative.
Such big words. What's your name?
James B. Harmon, Jr. And what's yours, if I may ask?
You may, and it's Miss Ellis.
I like you, Miss Ellis. You have a trustworthy face.
Now, Jimmy, you wouldn't be trying to get around me.
Oh, please, Miss Ellis. I've heard so much about Mr. Keene, and I know he's the only man who can help me.
Help you with what?
Well, that's very confidential.
Well, he's talking at the moment with his assistant, Mike Clancy, but I'll see what we can do.
Oh,
come along, Jimmy.
Thank you, Miss Ellis.
Oh, Mr. Keene.
Yes, Miss Ellis?
This young man, Jimmy Harmon, insists upon seeing you.
Good morning, Jimmy.
Good morning, Mr. Keene.
I'm afraid I'm rather busy.
I know, but he says the nature of his business is very imperative.
Imperative? What in tarnation is that, Hushmite? Come over, Jimmy. Sit down.
Mr. Keene, you're a gentleman.
Thank you.
Yeah, guess you won't be needing me.
Suppose I introduce you to my assistant, Mike Clancy. I'm pleased to meet you.
I've heard about you too, Mr. Clancy. Very reliable, they say.
Well, thank you, my boy. Now, Jimmy, you haven't come here because any member of your family has disappeared, have you?
No, Mr. Keene. Just the opposite. We can't get rid of him.
Of who?
Well, of my uncle, Bill Harmon.
Your father's brother?
That's right. You see, Mr. Keene, he came to visit us, approximately 6 months ago.
You mean about 6 months ago?
Approximately. Well, Uncle Bill was only supposed to stay for a week or two, but he's been staying on and on. What I don't like, well, the very first night he sat down in the parlor in the nice, big, soft chair that's always been Father's. I went up to him, and I said, Uncle Bill, that's where Father always sits.
Yeah?
Well, he works very hard, and he needs that chair to relax in.
Yeah?
Don't you think you ought to get up?
Hey, Jimmy, why don't you just go and chase yourself?
Well, have your parents objected, Jimmy?
You can't object with a man like Uncle Bill. And something more, Mr. Keene.
Yes?
His eyes are too close together, and he doesn't have much back to his head.
Oh, really?
Yes, I made a study of that. It's a sign of bad character. Now take Mr. Clancy's skull.
Now, I thank you to leave my skull alone.
Well, I only wanted to say that your skull shows signs of excellent character.
Oh, well, now, that's different.
Jimmy, this is all very interesting, but...
Wait, Mr. Keene. There's something more.
Well?
I mean the man in black.
What man in black?
Well, I was walking on Fifth Avenue one day with Uncle Bill when this individual suddenly came out of a side street. Black suit, black derby, and black overcoat. He walked up to Uncle Bill and said...
Well...
Hello, Harmon.
Huh?
Fancy meeting you.
Oh, hello.
Didn't ever expect to run into me again, did you?
Look, I can explain everything.
No, I don't think you can.
I swear, the way it happened...
It happened the wrong way for you, Harmon.
Wait a minute. I can square myself. I can... Taxi! Hey, taxi! Come on, Jimmy. Hop into that cab.
And so your uncle suddenly ran away from this man in black, eh?
Yes, Mr. Keene. And now, I have a feeling that something terrible is going to happen. You've got to help me get Uncle Bill out of our house.
Jimmy, did your parents know you were coming here to see me?
Well, no, sir. I didn't tell them.
I'm afraid I don't really have any right to interfere.
Well, this is a dangerous situation, Mr. Keene.
Well, the kid's been to too many movies, boss. Hush.
Mr. Clancy, I resent that remark. I may be only 12 years old, but I'm not a child.
Oh, sure, sure.
Well, Mr. Keene?
Jimmy, much as I understand your dislike for your Uncle Bill, I'm afraid this is a matter for your parents to handle.
But, Mr. King...
I hope you'll drop in again someday when I have a little more time. Will you do that?
All right, Mr. King. But I know something is going to happen. Something terrible.
Mr. Keene, now if you'll just sign those letters.
Letters? Oh, yes, yes.
You're so absent-minded today. Something bothering you?
I've been thinking about the visit we had yesterday from that strange little boy.
Jimmy Harmon? Oh, he was just scaring himself.
Jimmy has a wisdom and perception far beyond his years.
Imagination, too. Now, here are the letters, pen and ink.
Boss! Mr. Keene.
Hello, Mike. Why so excited?
Well, I bought myself an evening paper on the way to the office here. And the first item that hits me eye, Saints Preserve Us.
Come, Mike. Let's see it.
There, on the bottom of page one. Read it, sir.
Man killed in auto accident. Boy vanishes.
Good heavens, that doesn't
Police
mean...
Police were left baffled today by an obvious hit-and-run accident early last night on Madison Avenue, which claimed the life of William Harmon, 44, of 3000 East 89th Street, where he was staying at the home of a brother. The dead man found lying in the roadway had gone walking with his young nephew, James Harmon Jr., age 12. But there has been no sign of the boy since the accident. Police are investigating.
Heavens above.
Hand me my hat and coat, Mike. I must talk to Jimmy's parents at once.
Mr. Keene. We knew Jimmy admired you, but we didn't know he'd been to see you.
He didn't tell you, Mrs. Harmon?
No, Mr. Keene.
He always used to say that if anybody ever disappeared, you'd be sure to find him.
Well, Mr. Harmon, more than ever, I hope I can justify Jimmy's faith in me. He's a splendid boy.
So serious and so good. A sweet little owl.
The way I blame myself for this. As I've told you, Jimmy had certain premonitions.
Well, I don't know that that had anything to do with it. We talked to a Lieutenant Walker.
Of the Missing Persons Bureau?
Yes.
He's an old friend of mine. What was his theory?
Just a hit-and-run case. And he thinks that maybe Jimmy became unnerved at the sight of blood and ran away. Or else
We hate to think of it.
Or else that Jimmy was also hurt and the driver maybe took him to some hospital and left him there. What do you think, Mr. Keene?
I need more facts. Now, what can you tell me about your brother, Mr. Harmon?
Well, Bill is my brother, and I don't like talking bad of the dead.
He moved in 6 months ago and just wouldn't move out again.
What was his occupation?
Occupation? I wouldn't much know. I hadn't seen him in 10 years. Business, he said.
He talked about big deals sometimes. He said he'd made a lot of money out west.
Mm-hmm. What was he supposed to be doing in New York?
Looking for some opportunity to invest.
And that's all you know?
Oh, I wish we could do something more to help you, Mr. Keene. You're so kind to drop everything like this and go hunting for Jimmy.
To me, it's the most important case of my life. Well, I'll have to go now. The Missing Persons Bureau is my next stop.
Thank you, Mr. Keenan. God bless you.
Lieutenant Walker, it just happened the boy came to my office yesterday to tell me that strange story.
Well, I certainly appreciate the tip, Mr. Keene. It makes it more than just a hit-and-run accident.
I'm very much afraid so. You don't mind my stepping into the case, Lieutenant?
No, no. Glad to have you.
About the boy, I presume you're in touch with all the hospitals?
Yes, it's still possible. He was also hurt, and the driver was soft-hearted enough to want to get him to a doctor.
Yes. There weren't any witnesses to the accident or whatever it was?
No, no one. No, excuse me. Lieutenant Walker speaking. Oh, yeah, Martin. You got a pretty good set of prints?
What's that?
I'll be darned. Yeah. Well, thanks anyhow.
Bad news, Lieutenant?
Funny news, Mr. Keene. That was a man at the morgue. Jeepers, there are 2 billion people in the world, and they all got fingerprints. Now, just when it would help to know...
This man has no fingerprints?
Not a trace.
You mean his fingertips have been mutilated?
Yep, the old gag. All 10 fingers badly burned and healed over with scars.
Yes, that is news.
Yeah, clear as day. He was an old mobster. Did it deliberately to cover up his record.
Well, maybe he did once have an accident.
No. Now, he belonged to a mob.
One way or another, we're up against a stone wall. Even his own brother knows nothing about him.
Well, Mr. Keene, only one thing left to do. Send out a nationwide alarm for the kid, Jimmy. So, if you'll excuse me now...
I'm running along anyhow. No fingerprints. Who was he, anyhow? What was he hiding? Harmon, Mrs. Harmon, the one important thing right now is to get back in the dead man's past.
Well, I've shown you every blessed thing that was in his room, Mr. Keene.
Not one single paper there to give us a lead. One moment. Do you recall anybody who may have phoned him regularly?
Well, now come to think of it...
Yes, Mrs. Harmon?
The one person I ever knew Bill to have anything to do with, it was last week. Mr. Benson phoned him here 2 or 3 times.
Benson? Any idea who he was?
No.
Or where he might be reached?
I remember once that Bill wasn't in, and Mr. Benson left a message where to call him back.
Where? Try to remember. It may be very important.
A hotel it was. It's a funny name, like that man in England.
What man?
Lord somebody. He has to do with rationing. It was the only way I remembered.
Oh, Woolton?
That's it. The Hotel Woolton.
Mr. Benson.
That's right, clerk.
You wouldn't have his first name.
I'm afraid not. All I know is that he was registered here last week.
I looked through these files. Yes, we had a Harley Benson.
Good. Is he still in the hotel?
No, checked out yesterday.
Yesterday. All the bad luck. Did he leave any home address with you?
Just Chicago.
That's a very big city. Of course, there's just a chance he might be in the Chicago telephone book.
But you'll find the out-of-town phone books on the end of the counter there.
Well, thank you.
Find it, sir?
Yes, here it is, thank you. Benson.
Any luck, sir?
No. No Harley Benson. I rather imagine he wouldn't be in the phone book anyhow.
Well, sir, if there's anything more I can do, I'll
yes,
be...
there is. You keep records, of course, of all long-distance phone calls for your guests?
Oh, yes.
Would you mind showing me Benson's? To explain my right to ask, my name is Keene. I'm a tracer of lost persons. I'm now looking for a 12-year-old boy, Jimmy Harmon, who has disappeared.
Oh, yes, I read all about it in the papers. Let me see. The bill file's right here, Mr. Keene. Yes. Here's Benson. He made several calls.
Did he call Chicago?
Yes, sir. 3 times. His only long-distance call.
And the number he phoned?
Here you are, sir. The same all 3 times.
Thank you, clerk. That's all I need to know.
Well, here we are, boss. This is the house that Benson phoned to from New York.
Didn't expect this. Prettier cottage as I've ever seen.
Well, I've known gangsters to hide out in stranger places.
All right. Strike a match now, Mike. Let's see the name on the doorbell. It says Malcolm Dugan.
It's an alias. I'm sure it's Benson. And that Benson is that man in black that Jimmy talked about.
Possibly.
Well, let's bust right in and face it.
Hey, you out there. Anything you want?
Well, you see, we...
Yeah, I seen you through the window, prowling around in the dark.
Indeed you did, Benson.
How'd you know my name?
That's a long story. I've come all the way from New York to talk with you. Though I didn't expect to find you under the name of Dugan.
Dugan's a cousin of mine. I board here.
May we come in?
Sure. Why not?
Now then, my name is Keene.
Say, not the detective.
That's right. This is my assistant, Mike Clancy.
Okay. What's next?
What do you know about Bill Harmon?
Bill Harmon?
A gunman, huh? Trigger man for one of the Chicago mobs. Alky racket. Or was it dope? Or maybe black market. And you did him in.
Oh, wait a minute, Clancy. Back up.
All right. Tell us in your own way.
Harmon ain't no mobster. He was the same as what I still am.
And what's that?
A prison guard in the Lakeshore Penitentiary.
A prison guard?
Sure, until 5 years ago when he quit. I didn't hear a word from him until I was in New York on vacation last week and ran into him on the street.
On the street? You get that, boss?
1 second, Mike. Benson, are you in the habit of wearing black suits and overcoats?
Me? You think I'm an undertaker?
Well, now, when you ran into Harmon, did he tell you what he was doing?
Well, the salesman, he said. We had a couple of beers together, 2 or 3 times. He didn't talk much.
Tell me, was there any special reason why he left his job at the penitentiary?
No, just quit.
And what were his duties?
Same as me, guarding the death house. And come to think of it...
Yes?
There was something a little funny in his quitting. He did it just a couple of hours before that big racketeer, Legs Mosley, was burned.
Mosley? Oh, yes.
And Harmon just walked out. Said he had enough executions. Well, it happens that way sometimes with a guard.
Yes, I've heard.
But now I remember something else. The minute Legs came out for his last walk to the chair, he asked for Harmon. Where's Harmon, he says. He's got to be here. He's always here. I said Harmon had a previous appointment.
So Legs kept asking for him.
Yeah, Mr. Keene. Think it meant anything?
Tell me something else, Benson. Are there any members of the old Mosley mob still in the penitentiary that I could talk to?
No, not a one. Tell you what, though. There is a guy in the pen, a lifer, who was supposed to burn the same night with Mosley. He got reprieved to life. His name is Rayburn. Like to talk to him?
You bet I would. The first thing tomorrow morning. Rayburn, I gather you're no gangster.
No, Mr. King. I committed my murder over a woman.
Well, as I've told you, I'm trying my best to trace a fine 12-year-old boy who's disappeared. Somehow the trail leads right here to the penitentiary.
How do you mean?
It's too long a story to tell right now. There's only one question I want to ask.
Yes, sir?
Why did Bill Harmon suddenly quit his job as a guard in the death house a few hours before Mosley's execution?
Well, you see...
And why didn't Harmon have the nerve to go into the death chamber that night to see him executed?
Mr. Keene, I don't want to get anybody in trouble.
Don't worry about that. Harmon is dead. The question now is to try to save the life of an innocent boy. Well, why did Harmon quit?
Well, because he welched on a bargain.
Welched? How?
Well, while Lex Mosley was waiting to burn, some of his gang reached Bill Harmon and made a proposition. They would pay him $20,000 if he would help spring Legs from the death house. The brains of the plan was a fellow called Blackie.
Blackie?
Well, they called him that because he always dressed in black. Blackie Westlake.
Yes, you're right on.
Well, the way I got the story, Harmon agreed. But he wanted some of the money in advance. So they gave him $10,000, and he would get the rest after Legs was over the wall and free. I knew all about it because they were going to let me walk out the same time.
But Harmon never carried out his crooked bargain.
No, Mr. King. Talk of crooks out crooking each other. He took the $10,000 and beat it. Legs died in the chair. I got a reprieve. But that's ancient history, isn't it?
Yes, ancient history that suddenly came back to life. Thank you, Rayburn.
Why, sure, boss, it's as plain as day now. Blackie Westlake and the other members of the old mob killed Harmon for revenge.
Yes, and abducted Jimmy because he had once seen Blackie before and was in a position to identify him to the police.
Right.
Now the next step. We phone Lieutenant Walker in New York and ask him to send out an alarm.
For every member of the old Mosley mob?
No, Mike. Just for Blackie Wesley.
Then why just for Blackie?
To start a civil war.
Boss, I don't get it.
You know the old saying, when thieves fall out, honest men get their due? Mike, that's the only way of getting Jimmy safely out of the hands of those gangsters.
Oh, psychology stuff.
Right. Let's phone Walker now and then get back to New York.
Blackie.
Next on that hoodlum stuff.
Well, that's what you are. When are you going to let me out of the cellar?
When I feel like it. Get back there, I'll slap you. That's better. Look, Four Eyes, I brought you a sandwich out of the kindness of my heart.
I don't want your sandwich. Why are you keeping me here?
Because you're too darn smart, Professor. You saw us bump off your dear, dear uncle. If I let you go, the cops would take you to headquarters, you'd identify my picture.
Just when I thought. You're one of those habitual criminals.
Shut up.
I can tell that from the shape of your ears and the index of your cranium.
Stop that highbrow stuff. My cranium's all right.
Where is this place you're keeping me?
A warehouse. And a lot nearer your home plate than you think.
I'm sick of it. It's cold. Let me out of here.
You stay right here till the noise dies down. Now go on. Get back. Get back or I'll smack you.
Take your hand off me. Let me go.
Oh, yeah?
You slapped me right in the face. You knocked my glasses off.
That's only a sample.
Let me out of here. Let me go.
Little wise guy.
Hey, Blackie.
Yeah, Montana?
Over here. I was just outside and got a newspaper.
So what?
Me and the others are scrambling out of here.
Why?
Look at this paper, the front page.
Let me see. Oh.
Blackie Westlake hunted in murder and abduction. That means you.
Thought I was covered up the whole way.
You ain't, but we are.
Now, wait a minute.
You're hot, Blackie, hot as fire. The whole town's looking for you. So the rest of us is taking the car and scramming. Because we're still in the clear.
You're not walking out on me. You're staying right here. If we burn, we burn together.
Not in your life, Blackie.
Okay, maybe this'll teach you.
Oh, you rat! Larry French, come quick!
Oh, so you want to shoot it out, huh?
It just makes me sick to think of Jimmy in the hands of those gangsters.
He's a bright boy, Mrs. Harmon. We can count on him handling himself intelligently.
And besides, Mother, the police are hunting everywhere.
Yes, but they might take weeks and still not find him.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Harmon. I've done my best. Now it's only a question of letting nature take its course.
Nature? But, Mr. Keene, those men are killers.
That's exactly what I'm counting on. You see...
Oh, the door.
I'll go and see. Just remain calm, Mother.
Hello, everybody.
Jimmy.
Oh, Jimmy. Oh, Jimmy. Thank God you're back again. Jimmy, my darling.
Hello, Mother. Hello, Dad.
Oh, darling, did those men hurt you? Are you all right?
I'm just a little hungry. Relax, everybody.
Oh, Jimmy, we were just about crazy with worry. Where were you?
In a warehouse in Brooklyn.
Well, how did you ever get away from there?
In a police car. Thanks to Mr. Keene. I guess you'd like to know what happened, Mr. Keene.
Yes, Jimmy, I certainly would.
Well, just about an hour ago, I was locked in the cellar, but I heard an argument start. The rest of the gang wanted to run away without Blackie. Suddenly, they were shooting all over the place. When the police came a little later, they were all dead or dying, like the Kilkenny cat.
Good heavens.
You see, Mr. Keene, they didn't have much loyalty to each other.
Yes, Jimmy, that's exactly what I was counting on.
Mr. Keene, Lieutenant Walker told me how you did it while he was driving me back. Psychology, that's what you call it.
Whatever it was, Mr. Keene, you saved Jimmy's life.
How can we ever thank you?
My own happiness is reward enough.
Mr. Keene, there was something I wish to request of you.
Yes.
What's that?
Well, when I go up, may I have a position in your organization?
Well, Jimmy, I never had a higher compliment from anybody. Of course you may.
Listen next week at the same time when Mr. Keene brings us the fascinating case of Mr. Trevor's Secret. the girl, a woman who wants to be popular, knows that one of her most important assets is a charming smile and teeth that sparkle and gleam. Knows that no matter how smartly she may dress or make up, teeth that are dingy and discolored looking instantly create an unfavorable impression. And the same is true of the man in business, whose very livelihood depends on selling himself. He knows how quickly discolored looking teeth can bring failure. That's why today thousands of smart and successful men and women are changing to the new Colonos high polishing toothpaste. So for your own sake, try the new Colonos toothpaste yourself. It works like a jeweler's polish on tarnished silver. It helps remove dull, dingy surface stains. Ask for Colonos toothpaste, K-O-L-Y-N-O-S, at your drugstore tonight. You've been listening to Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons. Now on the air at a new time, every Thursday night, 7:30 to 8 Eastern Wartime, over this network. Don't miss Mr. Keene next Thursday night when the kindly old Tracer turns to the case of Mr. Trevor's secret. This is Larry Elliott saying good night for the makers of Colonel's toothpaste and inviting you to listen to Friday on Broadway at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Wartime over most of these stations tomorrow night.
Another case solved by Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons. That CBS radio broadcast first heard on the 10th of February, 1944. Bennett Kilpack, the star. You're listening to Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levenier. It's an hour of radio mystery, and now Nightbeat, with an interesting broadcast from the series, where normally the lead, Randy Stone, played by Frank Lovejoy, would target a specific story or case. In this episode, called Random Dialing, it's exactly what it is, a random phone call setting the scene. This NBC episode first heard on July 31st, 1950.
This is Randy Stone. I cover the night beat for the Chicago Star. Stories start in many ways. That night, my story began with the innocent ringing of my telephone. I didn't know that on the other end of the line was death.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
It was my night off. I locked the door, pulled down the window shades of my $6 a week ivory tower, and took the cork from a bottle of, Mother Jones' soothing stomach syrup, and reached for, you should pardon the expression, a book. No, what the heck, a lot of people read books. School children, for instance. Tonight, some other poor sucker was walking the night beat, and as far as I was concerned, the whole world could take a walk. But as it turned out, the joke was on me. The world took a walk, all right. Right into my snug little ivory tower. It began modestly enough with the ringing of my telephone. Yeah?
Randy, this is Matt Cummel. Where have you been?
Oh, look, Mr. Editor, I'm on my own time.
I called every redhead in town. I called every bar and grill. I called the police station, the county hospital, the morgue. Where have you been?
Well, you found me, Matt, at home.
Oh, that's great. That's great. You'll never guess who's looking for you.
Okay, I'll never guess.
Mr. DeStout's come to town.
Edward DeStout, our distinguished publisher?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to talk to you about that night beat stint of yours.
What about it?
Well, he's got some ideas. Maybe he wants to expand it into a column. He's only going to be in town until tonight, so he wants you to phone him right away. Andover 23820. You got it?
Yeah, what are we calling him this season? Father of the Water, Star of Stars, or just plain Bill?
Randy, call him right away. It sounded important.
Okay. So long. Good evening, Mr. DeStout. Your humble servant, Mr. DeStout. Now drop dead, Mr. DeStout.
Jerry's on that garage.
Garage? Is this Andover 23820?
No, this is 30829. You must have dialed wrong.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry. Two, three, eight, two... Oh. Busy. Well, I'd have to try again in a couple of seconds, so I didn't even bother putting the receiver back on the hook. And from that little thing, it all began. I started thinking, isn't it funny how by just missing one number on the dial, instead of getting a millionaire publisher with ulcers, I got Jerry's all-night garage? What would have happened if I dialed 7 instead of 9? Then who would have answered the phone? It was a strange thought. Through this little dial, the whole city was at my fingertips. I remembered reading somewhere that there were 6 million telephone combinations on one dial. Then on the spur of the moment, I did a dumb thing. I spun the dial 7 times in rapid succession without even looking at the numbers. And the phone started ringing. I had a connection. Where was it ringing? Who had destiny chosen to get my call? Some frowsy little gal crying her eyes out in the back bedroom? A dozing night watchman in an office closed for the night? Was my call interrupting a family brawl in some dark flat on the north side? Was it breaking up the sleep of some poor guy working a night shift? Well, wherever it was ringing, there was no answer. So I tried dialing DeStout's number again. I thought, what a swell idea for a column. The whole city at your fingertips. Still busy. So, again, just for the fun of it, and without looking at the phone, I dialed 7 times.
Fred, listen, darling, don't hang up again. Let me talk to you. Please, please, darling.
Hey, what is this?
What? Oh, I thought... What do you want?
Oh, nothing. I must have dialed the wrong number. I'm sorry.
Wait a minute. Don't hang up. Maybe you can help me.
Help you? What is it?
My life's in danger.
Come again?
I've got to have a doctor right away.
Well, I'll call one for you.
But I can't have any doctor. I've got to call one who would understand. One who wouldn't betray Fred.
Then why don't you call Fred's doctor?
I've called Dr. Bechtel.
Bechtel?
Yes, Russell Bechtel. He's Fred's doctor. But his nurse says he's out on a call and she doesn't know where to reach him. I couldn't tell her the trouble I'm in. She wouldn't understand. She'd only tell me to call the police.
The police?
Yes. Fred's had one of his attacks. He's threatened to kill me again. And this time he's gone for a gun.
Oh, well then, sister, you better call the police.
No! They put Fred away for good and I couldn't stand that. I'd rather be dead.
Oh, I get it.
Don't believe.
Oh, you catch on fast. Who put you up to it, honey? Sounds like the boys on the police beat.
Listen, you've got to believe.
Does it say so in the Constitution? Look, I'm pretty busy.
Please, please, you've got to. You've just got to. You've got to.
Wait a minute. How could this be a gag? You didn't call me. I called you.
I swear I'm telling you the truth. You've just got to believe me. It's my only chance.
Keep talking.
Look, I don't know who you are or how you happen to call this number, but if you don't help me, I'm finished. All Fred needs is a doctor, one we can depend on. Fred's been sick for a long time. When he gets these spells, he temporarily goes out of his mind. And Dr. Bechtel can always snap him out of it.
Well, we'll call him.
But I told you I can't reach Dr. Bechtel.
Well...
Oh, you must believe me. And you've got to promise not to call the police.
What are you talking about? If your life's really in danger, of course I'll call the police.
All right, then just forget the whole thing. Goodbye.
Wait a minute. Don't hang up. Just give me a chance to catch my breath, will you? Now, let me see.
Yes?
Well, okay, you sound like a good kid. Maybe I can get you to a doctor. My doctor, Lawrence Blair.
Will he do as I say?
Yeah, but I better be able to tell him a few things about this, or he'll just tell me to go to bed with an ice bag and a couple of aspirins. Now, just who is this guy, Fred?
He's my husband, Fred Schwery.
He's threatened to kill you?
Yes, as soon as he returns.
Why don't you get out of the house before he returns?
I'm not in my house.
Oh?
We were out driving when he got this spell. Oh, it was terrible. Terrible.
All right. Now, try to relax. Now, tell me about it.
Well, he started accusing me of not loving him anymore. And he threatened me like a madman.
Yeah?
And then he drove me to the studio and locked me in. Said he was going for a gun to kill me.
Where is this studio?
I'm not sure. I didn't watch closely. I was pleading with him all that time.
Oh, fine. That makes it dandy.
I never knew about the studio. He's a commercial artist. I guess he came here to work. See, we've only been married for 3 months.
Well, aren't there any windows you can break through and get out?
No, it's on the 8th floor.
Well, what about the fire escape?
It's at the end of the building. I pounded on the door and tried to get help, but no one's come. We haven't lived in this city very long. I've called a few friends we know, but no one's home. I don't know what to do.
Now, look, there's no time for that. I'm going to get my doctor over to you. I got to know where you are. Now, you go and look out the window for any identifying landmarks that would help us find you.
All right, all right. But please don't hang up.
No, I won't hang up. Now, go on. Step on it. While I waited for her to return, I opened my collar and I loosened my tie. What had I gotten into? Me? Nothing. But what about that poor kid? Why wasn't she back on that phone? Where was she? Come on, lady. Lady, where was she? And then she was back.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, I was so afraid you'd hung up.
Well, now do you have any idea where you are?
Well, there's a big warehouse directly across from this building.
Yeah?
And about a block east of here, I can see a radio tower. But I can't quite make up the name on it.
A radio tower? What else?
Well, there's just the usual apartment buildings along the street. But on the corner, there's a large supermarket.
A supermarket? Anything else?
Yes, there's a park a few blocks away. Looks like Lincoln Park.
And the building you're in now, can you tell me anything about it?
It's white brick. And there are two more floors above this one.
All right, okay, we'll be able to find you. I'll call my doctor right away. He knows the city better than the guys who built it. He'll find you. And I'm going to stay right here at this phone. If anything goes wrong, I want you to call me right away. You understand?
Yes, yes, I will.
My number is Butterfield 13003. Have you got that?
Butterfield 13003.
That's right.
But remember now, I'm depending on you not to call the police.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because if you do, I'll deny everything. Maybe that sounds crazy, but you don't know how much I love Fred. How wonderful he is to me. Well.
Yeah, well, kid, nothing sounds crazy to me anymore. I'm even ready for that thing about the storks. Now, don't forget to call me right back if you need me. I'll call my doctor right away.
All right.
When I hung up the phone, I was ready for a blood transfusion. I tried to light a cigarette, but the match shook so much you'd have thought I was signaling somebody. But then as I reached for the phone book to call my doctor, I started thinking again. I said, oh, Randy, it's too pat to be true. I couldn't help imagining that someplace a room full of practical jokers were doubled up in laughter over the way the girl had taken me in. But how could that be when I called her? Well, just the same, I'd better check. She said her doctor was Russell Bechtel. Before I called my doc, I'd call this fellow Bechtel just to make sure. I found his number in the book. Dr. Bechtel's office?
Yes. Who's calling, please?
I'm a newspaper man on the store. I'd like to talk to the doctor.
Oh, I'm sorry. He's not in now. He's out on a call. Can I help you?
Well, maybe. Does the doctor have a patient named Fred Schwery?
Well, these things are confidential.
Yes, look, ma'am, there's no time for that. A few moments ago, I spoke to Fred Schwery's wife.
Well?
She told me that Schwery had gone into a violent fit of some kind.
He's had another attack?
Yes, he's got her locked in his studio, and he's gone for a gun to kill her.
Right away.
You mean she was telling me the truth?
I mean Fred Schwery's a dangerous paranoiac. He's had 3 attacks in the last 2 months.
Why wasn't he put away?
Well, the doctors begged that girl to commit him to asylum, but she's so stubborn.
You know the address of Schwery's studio?
No. The doctor might.
Well,
but I have no way of reaching him till he calls in. Our records show only Mr. Schwery's home address.
All right, thank you. Will you please call me back if you reach the doctor? My number is Butterfield, 13003.
Yes, of course, but what are you going to do?
Well, I don't know. She wants me to get my own doctor out there. She gave me enough landmarks to find the place.
Then you'd better hurry, because if Schwery's had another one of his attacks, and he gets to that girl with a gun, you'll never find her alive.
Yes, yes, I know. Goodbye, thank you. So, the poor kid had been telling me the truth. I know I ought to call the police, but I remembered her saying that if I did, she'd deny ever talking to me. Yes, and maybe she was stubborn like the nurse said, but she was also a mighty brave kid. I started looking through the phone book for my doctor's number. Black, Blaine, oh, where is it? Is it Blair, Jasper, Lawrence? There it is, Dr. Lawrence Blair, Radcliffe 41079. Before I could dial the number, my phone started ringing. Yeah?
I can only talk for a second. I was looking down. I just saw Fred drive up in the car. It's too late for the doctor.
Yeah, but not for the police. I'll call him right away.
No, you can't.
But don't you see your life is in danger? If he's insane, he's got to be restrained.
Oh, please give me a little time to try to handle it my way.
No, no, I refuse to.
Then I'll tell Fred the police are coming for him and give him a chance to get away.
But you don't understand.
I only understand that I love Fred. Nothing else matters one bit. I've talked him out of these attacks before, and I'm going to try to do it again.
All right, all right. How much time do you want?
Give me half an hour.
No, 15 minutes. If you don't call back in 15 minutes, I'll know you're in trouble, and I'll have the police out there at once.
15 minutes. All right, now I've got to hang up. He's unlocking the door.
Now remember, 15 minutes.
Yes, yes, I've got to hang up now.
And
Nightbeat and Randy Stone.
This time I'd hit the jackpot in spades. I was just doodling on the phone, spinning the dial without even watching it, when I got a girl waiting to be killed by her crazed husband. I promised to wait 15 minutes to give her a chance to snap the guy out of it. And if I didn't hear from her at the end of that time, I was to call the police. I wasn't sure my watch was right, so I dialed for the correct time.
At the tone, the time will be 6:05.
My watch was a couple of minutes slow. I reset it exactly. 6:05. Okay, if I didn't hear from her by 6:20, I'd call the police. Her husband was with her now. I could close my eyes and see that madman threatening her life in that studio. I felt my stomach cramp up like a troop of Boy Scouts were practicing their nuts. Why had I promised to wait? Maybe this was her. I felt tiny chills race up and down my fingers as I reached for the phone. Yeah?
I want to speak to Margie.
Huh?
Tell her it's Hal. Go on, call the phone, you hear me?
Look, pal, you've got the wrong number. So long.
Wait a minute.
Look, will you hang up?
Don't give me none of your lip, mister. You just call Margie to the phone.
I'm expecting an important call. Hang up.
Yeah, well, let me check.
Dope. What time was it? 6:07. I took the watch off my wrist and set it on the telephone table under the lamp so I could see it easily. I watched the tiny hands circling so slow. 6:08. What was happening in that studio? This might be her. Yeah?
This is a nationwide radio survey.
What's that?
Are you listening to your radio?
Will you please hang up? I'm expecting an important call.
Oh, I'm sorry to bother you, sir. Thank you.
What if she'd call when someone else was on the phone? I had to keep the line clear.
Operator,
I'm expecting a very important call during the next 10 minutes, and I don't want to receive any other calls. Can you help me?
Is the call you're expecting long distance, sir?
No, it's local.
It would be impossible to block out your line for local calls, sir, because then the call you're waiting for would be unable to come through.
Oh, yes, I hadn't thought of that. Thank you, bye. 6:09. Had only 1 minute gone by? I could feel my nerves tightening up like someone was turning a screw. She should be calling soon. What was happening to her? Miss Waring?
I want to speak to Margie.
Didn't I tell you? You've got the wrong number, and I get off the line and stay
off. I got the right number, all right, smart guy. You just put Margie on the phone, you hear me? You tell her,
how. Why doesn't that bum stop calling? Why didn't he stop? Oh, okay, come on, relax, kid, relax. 6:12. Why had I promised to wait? I should be calling the cops right now.
Operator?
What do I dial for the police department?
You dial 211, sir. Or I can connect you.
No, not yet. I was just wondering about it. Thank you. I promised her I'd wait. Maybe she could control the guy, but why wasn't she calling? 6:13. Time was passing so slow. Oh, if that's that drunk again, who is it?
Stone, what are you trying to do to me? Get me fired?
Oh, Matt, it's you.
Yeah, your boss and editor. Who are you expecting, truth or consequences?
Look, Matt, hang up, will you? I'm waiting for a call.
Waiting for a call?
Yeah.
What's wrong with you, Randy? Didn't I tell you to call Mr. DeStout? He's waiting for your call, you crazy loon. Yeah. And you know how our honored publisher likes to be kept waiting.
Yeah, I haven't time to explain, Matt.
Don't explain anything. Get on that phone and call Andover 23820. Now, that's an order. He just called into our enemy. He asked me if he was expected to phone you. He's pouting up there, Randy, feeling abused. And you know what happens when Mr. DeStout feels abused.
Yes, all right. Hang up, Matt.
You'll call him.
Yes, right away. Hang up.
Okay, and after you talk to him, call me back.
Yeah. I looked at my watch. 6:17. There was just 3 minutes left to get her call. I couldn't phone DeStout now. What if she should phone when I was talking to someone else? What if she had only that one chance and all she got was a busy signal? No, I couldn't call now. Hello.
Hello. Is this the Stone residence?
Yes. What do you want?
I'd like to speak to Mrs. Stone, if you don't mind.
There isn't any Mrs. Stone. Look, I'm very busy.
No, Mrs. Stone. Well, I'll just have to talk to you then, won't I?
Yes, but some other time.
I beg your pardon.
I'm very busy now.
Oh, this won't take but a tiny moment, and I have so many calls to make.
Look, madam.
I've been appointed by our local about the coming election, to ask you to cooperate with us in our drive to register
Huh? Madam, I'm not old enough to vote.
But if we all vote, then don't you see we can do something?
Look, I'm going to have to hang up.
But for heaven's sake...
Some other time. Yeah.
Buddy, you better not hang up for me again.
Will you stop calling this number? 619, and she hasn't called. I'm going to wait for one more minute to pass, and then I'm going to call the police. Hello?
Wendy Stone?
Yes?
I asked Matt Cummel to have you call me, Mr. Stone, but apparently you were unable to. This is Edward DeStout speaking.
Oh, the big boss. Oh, no.
What's that?
Yes, Mr. DeStout. I was going to call you as soon as I had the time.
As soon as you had the time? Well, I must say, that's not exactly flattering, Stone. I rather imagine
Mr. DeStout, I'm expecting a very important phone call.
There are people who think that a call from me is also rather important.
Can I call you in 5 minutes?
And what am I supposed to do? Just sit here waiting for your call like a lackey? I believe Connell told you I was leaving tonight.
But Mr. DeStout...
So we'll talk now, if you don't mind.
Look, instead of talking about this on the phone, how about me taking a cab over to your place as soon as my call comes through? We could talk it over much easier.
Oh, I think we can handle the matter over the phone very nicely.
But we can't handle it over the phone, don't you see? A girl's life is at stake, and you prattle on like we had all day.
A girl's life at stake, is it?
Yes.
I've heard about your talents for invention, Mr. Stone, but I don't think I enjoy the idea of you practicing them on me.
Look, DeStout, I'm afraid I'm going to have to do something else you won't enjoy. I'm afraid I'm going to have to hang up.
I wouldn't do that.
What time is it now? 6:21. It couldn't be. I couldn't have talked to him that long. Oh, hurry, 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 hurry.
At the tone, the time will be 6:21 1/2.
6:21 1/2. Well, I've kept my part of the bargain.
Department, Sergeant Harris speaking.
Oh, Harris, this is Randy Stone. Listen to me closely. We don't have any time to lose.
What's up, kid?
You better send out an all-points alarm on this. It's got to be fast.
Hey, slow down, slow down. I can't understand you.
Look, a while ago, I spoke to a girl on the phone. She told me her life was in danger. She was locked in a studio, and her husband was coming there to kill her.
Easy now, easy. I got to write this down.
You got to move fast, and we're not going to make it.
Go on.
This husband of hers, he's insane. He became violent.
How long ago did you talk this dame?
15 minutes ago.
Why don't you call us right away?
I'll tell you all about it later. We got to get to her.
Okay. What's the address of this studio?
I don't know her address. It's the first time I ever spoke to her.
Hey, Stone, you've been drinking.
No, I'm telling you the truth.
So how are we supposed to find her?
Well, she gave me a landmark she saw from her window. She gave me enough so you guys can get right to her.
All right. What are they?
All right, now let me see. She said her window looks right out on the blank walls of a warehouse.
Whose warehouse?
Well, she didn't say.
Oh, that's a big help. Next.
Well, she could see the tower of a radio station about a block away.
Could she make out the call letters of the station?
No.
That's no good. What else?
What do you mean, no good?
How many stations you got on your radio, Stone? What else?
Well, there's a supermarket down the street, a big supermarket.
Supermarkets are all over the place.
Yeah, but this one's near Lincoln Park.
What does that mean, the whole north side's near Lincoln Park? What else?
Nothing else. You add all those things up, it's got to lead you somewhere.
Yeah, we could find her all right in 3 or 4 hours.
But that's no good. In fact, she hasn't called back, means she's in trouble. If you don't get there right away, it'll be too late.
Hey, wait.
What?
Why, we're a couple of doves.
What do you mean?
She called you, would you call her?
I called her.
Okay, we're in business.
Huh?
We'll have a squad car out to their studio in 3 minutes.
I don't get it.
You call her, don't you see? All you gotta do is give us her phone number, and through the phone company, we can trace down her address in 30 seconds. What number did you call?
What number did I call?
Come on, Stone, come on. We've gotta move.
But I don't know what number I called. I didn't even look at the dial.
Come on, Stone, speak up. What number did you call?
I don't know what number I called.
You don't know?
Don't you understand? I don't know. I'll never know.
What?
I was doodling with the phone, and she answered.
Oh, well, I guess we'll just have to try to find her with the information you gave us. Well, it's going to take a long time, but there's nothing else we can do, huh, Stone?
Well, there's 6 million combinations on a dial. No, there's nothing else we can do. I hung up the phone and just sat there. I wanted to die quick and easy. What was I going to do now? How was I going to be able to go on living as though nothing had happened? I was just as much of a murderer as that crazy husband. How could I be so stupid? Why didn't I ask for a number? Why didn't I? Yeah?
Mr. Stone?
Yes?
This is Dr. Bechtel's nurse, Mr. Stone.
Yes.
Oh, I'm so glad I got you. It's all right.
What's all right?
I was able to locate Dr. Bechtel just after you called.
You what?
He knew the address of the studio all right, and he got there in plenty of time. We're sending Swarry to a sanitarium for treatment.
And the girl?
Oh, she's fine. I had to give her a sedative, though. That's why she didn't call herself. But all's well that ends well, like they say.
Oh, you know what I've been doing the last 15 minutes waiting for her call? I'm half nuts myself. I'm ready for a straitjacket.
But, Mr. Stone...
Why didn't you call me right away?
But, Mr. Stone, I've been trying. Your line's been busy.
Yep, that's what's called learning a lesson the hard way. The lesson being that ivory towers went the way of hoop skirts and 60-cent steaks. Nope, there's no escaping from the world. We're all tied together for better or worse, whether we like it or not. And no matter how well you lock your windows and bar your door, the dreams and the fears and the hopes of all your fellow men are still no farther away than your fingertips. Oh, no, no. I won't answer. Uh-uh. No, no, I can't. Oh, well. What's the use? Yeah?
Listen. I want to speak to Marge.
Oh, shut up. Oh, you know something. Next month I may decide not to pay my phone bill. Copy... Oh, no. What am I doing?
Nightbeat, a dramatic series, stars Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
From its two-year run on NBC, that was Nightbeat starring Frank Lovejoy, heard on July 31st, 1950. And that wraps up this hour of Mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more shows from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.